At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. This has to be the least known of all of Jesus' stories. I mean, prodigal son, good Samaritan, sower sowing seeds, treasure buried in a field, great parables, very famous. But did you even know that there was a parable called the parable of the 10 virgins? We went on a mission trip. We got to a village where we were staying, and the missionaries thought it would be fun, or at least interesting, to have our teenagers interact with their teenagers, even though our teenagers didn't speak English and they didn't speak, oh no, that's not right. So they split us up, and each team got some U.S. kids and some Panamanian kids, and we were told to act out a Bible story. Our group was supposed to act out a Bible story, great, except our group was given the parable of the 10 virgins. At first, the kids from America looked at me confused and said, 10 virgins? Is that in the Bible? But the Panamanian teens knew the story. Somehow they conveyed that in Spanish to us, and we acted it out. Turns out, this is how they do wedding parties in the Middle East. There's an engagement time, which lasts up to a year, where the husband goes out and builds a house for his bride. You know that line, when a girl gets married, she gets a new name and a dress? She gets a new name and address. So when the new address was ready, the groom and his friends would send word to the bride and her friends that he's heading her way. He's coming soon to get her bride and her friends. When the groom shows up, the wedding party then proceeds through the streets of the town to let everybody know that it's time for the wedding banquet. The whole town follows the party to the house. Huge banquet celebrates the marriage. In Jesus' story, this bride has 10 of her friends with her, chosen to help lead the parade. She picked 10 of her best girlfriends to lead the parade with her. And they get word that the groom is going to be there soon, so they all get ready. This is the big day. They've been waiting for a long time. But traffic was bad, or he forgot something back at the house and had to go back and get it, or he decided to stop at Wegmans and pick up some extra ho-hos for the party. We don't know why, but the groom says he's coming, but then he got delayed. And while the girls are waiting for him, they fall asleep. They're dressed, they're ready to lead the parade. It's a great honor to be a bridesmaid, but they're tired, and they're waiting, and they fall asleep. Don't blame them, they're not bodyguards, they're bridesmaids. Finally, the boys arrive. Jesus says, at midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." Here's the problem. To lead the parade, if it happened at night, required lights, lanterns, fuel. But some of the girls had not brought extra, figuring that they had enough when they started. When the parade was delayed, however, they got low, they ran out, they had no fuel. So they told the girls who had some, "Come on, share." And those girls, girls that had fuel, even though it's a Bible story where you think sharing is always going to be the right answer, they said, "No, go get your own." So the 5 girls whose gas gauges were on empty took off for the nearest 7-Eleven to see if they could find some butane. Although, I just thought this was kind of weird. Is this not weird? Like, shouldn't they have shared? Like, if more people come to dinner than you expect, you give each person a little less of the chicken pot pie, but everybody gets some. If everybody's thirsty and there's only one Pepsi left in the car, you pass it around, everybody gets a swig, right? If there are only 2 pieces of baklava left, and there are 4 people at the table, I get 1 piece and the other 3 split the other piece, right? It's not hard to share. We all know you're supposed to share. What's up with these selfish 5 fuel havers not sharing with the needy? But then I realized the bridesmaids were each carrying a torch. And they must have been British, which is what English people, a torch call, is a flashlight. The 5 girls had flashlights with batteries that died. So they said, "Hey, you girls with flashlights that still work, you have 4 batteries in your flashlights, give us 2 each." And the batteried girl said, "No, ours need 4 batteries. It won't work if we give you 2. Go buy your own." Do you hear about the guy who was giving away used batteries free of charge? The five bridesmaids who did not have enough fuel were denied by the five who did have fuel, because the five who had fuel needed what they had to do the job that they'd been assigned. So the five who were short took off, hoping to buy fuel and get back for the parade. And then we get to the next part of Jesus' story, which is also kind of unexpected and kind of weird. Jesus says, but while they were on their way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came, and they said, Lord, Lord, open the door for us. But he replied, truly I tell you, I don't know you. And we say, wow, that's harsh. No, you can't come in. No, I am not going to open the door. No, I'm not even sure I know you. What in the world? That can't be right, right? I mean, they meant well. They were there at the bride's home. They were waiting with her. They must have been her friends. How can this new husband bar the door to these five girls? Couple of things. First, these girls had one job. One job. All they had to do was be ready. And like all bridesmaids for all time, their one job is to make sure that the bride's day is perfect. That's their only thing. But instead of being ready and celebrating with her when the husband finally shows up, they're over in the home and garden section in Walmart, and the bride is worrying about them. She does not swoon over her husband when he arrives like he hopes she will. She's preoccupied with her unprepared friends who are out shopping. And if there was anybody at your wedding who drew attention to himself because he's stupid, or if any girl at your wedding made it much harder for your bride to enjoy herself that day because she wanted the attention, you could see why this new husband would have no patience for these five girls. You understand this guy's reaction perfectly. Let you in, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. When they show up and they say, we're here, let us in, he says, that's a hard no. They had made the bride's day less good by their behavior, which made the bridegroom's day less good, and that cost them. That's one thing. The other thing is that this is Jesus' story. Folks, this is Jesus' story. It's his parable. He's telling it. We don't get to change it to fit what we think it should say. It says what Jesus says it says. A parable is a story that may or may not have ever happened, but parables always could happen. These are real-life possible stories. These are stories of things that could actually happen. And in this one, at the end, the groom said, see ya. And he slams the door. Now, if this was a parable that Jesus was using to teach about forgiveness, probably this parable would end differently. But he's not teaching about forgiveness with this story. This is Jesus' story. He has something for us to learn in this story. And he gives us the moral of the story that he wants us to get at the end, when he says in Matthew 25, verse 13, therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. This is the lesson we need to heed. This is the idea Jesus wants us to understand in this story. We need to always be ready because we're not sure when he's going to show up. Jesus wants you to be alert. He wants you to be ready, prepared for his arrival when he comes. So the question that we need to answer at the end of this story is, are we? Are you set? Are you good? Have you prepared yourself? Are you waiting? One job. Are you ready? Yes or no? Not, well, you know, I've been thinking about it. Not, well, I was at one point, but then, you know, stuff happened. Not, well, pretty sure, I hope so. Are you ready to go when he arrives? Are you going to say, yes, let's do this? Yes or no? The kingdom of heaven is like 10 bridesmaids waiting for the party to start. That worked out well for some of them. That did not work out at all for the others. Ready or not? That's parable number one from Matthew's 25th page. Parable number two is not teaching readiness. This next parable teaches responsibility. Sharon read it for us. The owner goes on vacation. He wants to spend some time away. But instead of shutting down operations while he's gone, he decides he's going to entrust management duties to three of his best guys. Based on what the owner thinks each guy is capable of, to the one guy, her version read $5,000. $2,000, $1,000. Okay, what it really says is 5 talents. A talent is about, as near as we can figure, 20 years worth of wages. So 5 would be 100 years worth of wages. So it's a big deal what this owner gives them. He says to the first guy, he hands the keys to 5 of his factories. To the second guy, he hands the keys to 2 of his factories. To the last guy, he says, here's a key to one of my factories. And he said, I'm going to trust you guys. You know how I like it. Just keep it going while I'm gone. And he takes off. Guy number 1 does a good job. He encourages his workers. He improves productivity. He works out some deals with new clients. He hires more help. He builds new buildings. Business is booming. He's doing well. Guy number 2 manages his 2 factories really well. They were already ready for expansion. He keeps everything going in a good direction. Takes a couple calculated risks. It pays off. Really good. Guy number 3, he found that running a factory is a lot harder than it looks. There's lots of pressure. You got to make a lot of decisions. You got to sometimes take risks and deal with pushback when it doesn't go well, and it's worrisome, and it's hard to run a factory. So guy number 3 kind of scales back. He cuts some workers. He just keeps things going, barely keeps it going. But the owner never checks in. The owner doesn't call, doesn't text, doesn't email. They never get a postcard from him, nothing. So guy number 3 starts to think that the owner might not even ever come back. So whatever happens to his factory, no big deal. Until one day the owner shows up and he calls the 3 guys in to settle up. And guy number 1 says, boss, it's so good. We've opened up 5 more factories since you left. And the owner goes, whoa, that's great. I knew you would. I'm making you a partner. And guy number 2 says, boss, I got good news, not as good as him, but we opened up 2 more factories, 2 new factories. And the owner said, wow, that's great. I knew you would. I'm making you a partner. And guy number 3 said, whoa, man, sir, what you asked is hard. It's hard work running a factory. But fear not, the factory you gave me is still there. Ish. Mostly still there. The owner said, you got to be kidding me. You did nothing but keep it going. And the guy, well, I kind of kept it going. I mean, production's down, profit's down, morale's in the toilet. It's really hard running a factory. And I know that you like results, so I didn't want to mess anything up. And the owner said, not even trying is way worse than messing something up. Wow, so bad. The owner said, okay, let's give your factory to guy number 1. He'll probably do something good with it. And you, not even trying to do anything with what I gave you, get out of my sight. End of story. Get out of my sight, Jesus says. End of story. Couple things about this story from Jesus. And remember, he's telling it. We don't change it. We're supposed to learn from it. It's his story. He told it like he liked it. So first, please note that the only guy who failed in this story is the one guy who didn't even try. The first 2 guys had to risk something to double their holdings. You don't get 100% return on your investment unless you're betting something pretty big at some point. And they both won on their bets. They took what the owner gave them. They tried some stuff, and it worked. According to the owner, the only guy who didn't win was the guy who wouldn't even try. We're all given gifts, folks. And Jesus' story is the only people who fail are those who don't do anything with their gifts. Again, in Jesus' story, 100% of the guys who tried using their gifts ended up winning. And 100% of the guys who didn't try didn't win. I think this story teaches us we should try. Whatever he gave us, we should try. But could I show you another lesson in this story that's been really big for me? This might not apply to everybody here, but if you're anything like me, and I know I certainly am, there is something to learn important, something really important we can learn from this last guy. And it's this. Sometimes you can't talk your way out of bad consequences. I know, usually you can. Usually you can figure out a way to somehow weasel your way out of something. We often think that if something's not like we think it should be, we can talk it to where it should be. Many of us can come up with an escape route by cleverly talking our way through. We use our words. This third dude was talented. He was one of the owner's favorites, or he wouldn't have gotten the gig in the first place. He had potential. He had built a reputation. He had escaped a lot of bad in his life somehow, probably partially at least because he was good at talking. He could manipulate conversations. Some of us can do that. if we talk long enough, we can convince people of stuff. Some of us have made a career out of using words to escape consequences. That's not true of everyone, I know. Some people are stunningly honest. They're mature, they're straight shooters, they just say what it is. Some people don't have this gift or curse of being able to talk your way out of anything. Some people don't depend on talking at all. Like the guy in the limerick named Wyatt. Do you know Wyatt? There was a young man called Wyatt whose voice was incredibly quiet, and then one day it faded away. Not everyone uses words like a weapon. Like, there was a young man from Peru whose limerick stopped at line 2. Not everybody I know depends on their words to save them, but a lot of us do. From when we were little, through school, through dating, through our work, through our marriage, through our lives, many of us have often found a way to talk in such a way that it saves us a world of hurt. Did you hear about Fluffy? Fluffy was the dog who got taken on an African safari with his owner. And one day Fluffy was out chasing butterflies, but he realized suddenly he had wandered alone into the jungle. And then he saw a leopard headed his way, and Fluffy thought, oh boy, I'm in trouble now. But thinking quickly and seeing some bones on the ground nearby, Fluffy grabbed one of the bones with his back to the leopard, began gnawing on the bone. And just as the leopard was about to leap on the dog, Fluffy looked around and said, wow, that was a delicious leopard. I wonder if there are any more around here. Hearing that, the leopard halted his attack in midair and with a look of terror slunk away, saying, whoa, that was close. That dog almost had me. A monkey in a tree close by saw all that, and he figured he could trade his knowledge of what had happened for the leopard's protection. So he took off after the leopard. But Fluffy, the dog, saw the monkey take off, and he figured something was up. The monkey caught up with the leopard, told him what had happened, and the leopard got furious that he had been tricked by a dog. So the leopard said, here, monkey, hop on my back. Let's see what I'll do to that sneaky dog. Fluffy then saw the leopard coming with the monkey on his back, and he thought, oh, that's trouble. But again, the dog thought quickly of a solution to his dilemma, and he sat down with his back to the leopard and the monkey, pretending he hadn't seen them approach. And when they were close enough to hear him, Fluffy said, where is that monkey? I can't seem to trust him. I sent him off half an hour ago to bring me back another leopard, and he's still not back. I know. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, wow, Walker, that's the second week in a row that a dog ended up looking better than a cat. But that's not really what I'm talking about here. The point is, lots of us live fluffy lives, thinking we can always talk our way out of trouble. We can always figure a way to get out of what we're in. However bad it is, we can always get out of it if we're just skillful enough with our words. I'm guessing that was true of employee number 3 in Jesus' story, don't you think? He thought, this is hard. I'm not going to do this. Thinking the boss man might never even show up. Why do I need to do this? Thinking, and if he does, I'm sure he'll understand. I can explain it to him. And he tried. And it always works. But in the end, he was on the outside looking in. D.C. Steinmetz wrote this paragraph. He said, the swift justice meted out to the lazy servant puts a merciful end to any notion that the disobedient and the dishonest will be able to blackmail their way into the kingdom of heaven by manipulating the goodness of God or playing on divine pity. He says, God's goodness is too clever to be taken in by such nursery tricks. Divine pity will forgive sins, but it will not condone them. End quote. Are you a good talker? Do you think you'll always figure a way to skate somehow? This parable of 3 guys says, no, you won't. You might think you can, but you won't. There was a young man in my hood. At making up limericks, he was good. He was quite adept at the practice, except for cramming as many possible words into the very last line as he could. Jesus is telling you, I promise, no matter how many words you use in your last line, no matter how smooth you are, no matter how much you've escaped in your whole lifetime, you are not going to talk your way around God. Parable number 1 on the kingdom of heaven. Be ready. Really. He's coming back be ready. One job, be ready. Parable number two, be responsible. Really, use what he has given you right now, like he would want. You won't be able to explain later why you didn't. So do, be responsible. And then there's the part at the bottom of the page. Kind of sounds like a parable, but it's not. The last part of Matthew chapter 25 is more of a transcript. It's more like a stenographer's record of a conversation that's going to happen in the future. Hasn't happened yet, but it's going to. And we are all going to be there when this conversation happens. In verse 31, Jesus says, "When the Son of Man comes in all his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered around before him. He will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left." That's where people get the idea this is another parable with the shepherd splitting up sheep and goats. But a parable is just a story of something that could happen. And Jesus isn't telling a story. He's saying this can and is going to and will happen. One day, he says, from my throne, surrounded by angels, I am going to divide all people into two groups. Two. There will be two groups in the end. One guy said, there are three kinds of people in the world, those who can count and those who can't. Jesus says, at the end of the world, there are two kinds of people, those on my right and those on the left. Verse 34, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. The reason all these people on the right got moved to that side was because of the stuff they did. Jesus calls them sheep. Because of the stuff they did, Jesus says, for him. Which, when he said it, apparently surprised them. Because they said, the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? Now, they are obviously and rightfully happy that Jesus sees it this way, but they don't remember doing it. And they say, excuse us, Jesus, sir, excuse me. What are you talking about? When did we ever do that for you? And in verse 40, Jesus says, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. And the people on the right went, oh, does that count? Is that how that works? Huh? Interesting. Helping people nobody else notices gets heaven's notice. Didn't know that. To the people on the other side of the courtroom, Jesus says, goats. Not greatest of all time, goats. And he says, you never helped me. And all the people on that said, wait a minute, Jesus, that's unfair. When did we not help you? Name one time. And Jesus will say, every time you didn't help somebody because it wasn't convenient, that was me. And all the people will say, well, if we would have known it was you, we would have helped. But it didn't look like you. It looked like nobody. Jesus said, my point exactly. You know that tricky line in Hebrews about hospitality? Where Hebrews says, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. How apparently, according to scripture, sometimes God has angels serve as mystery shoppers in your life. They just stop in to see how you're doing and how you treat them. Where they look like regular people who just need stuff, but actually they're angelic beings right in front of you. Hebrew says that happens. Yeah, well, Jesus sees that idea and raises it when he says here that when we serve the least likely people to be anywhere close to him, it's actually him. Let me give you an example of when I saw that happen. And I can. Because there's a person in our congregation who might be, not joking, might be one of the greatest people on earth today. Jesus says the greatest is the servant of all. And this person in our congregation serves all really well. Whatever needs done for whoever needs it. However inconvenient that is. However time consuming. However seemingly insignificant the need, it's taken care of. With excellence. with alacrity, without complaint, without charge, just does what needs to be done. And if you've been around us for any amount of time, this person has probably served you personally already. Not for praise, asking no credit to be given. In fact, this person hardly asks anything, hardly talks, other than as needed in the moment of serving. Doesn't really speak, just smiles and serves, and apparently loves doing it. And we love this person because of the doing it. And even though I have described this person perfectly and in great detail so far, a lot of you still don't know who I'm referring to because we have so many people like this in our congregation. But I am referring to one in particular at the moment. So Centerway had their four-year anniversary party last Sunday afternoon on the Mendon Church property where they're meeting now. They brought in three food trucks and they handed out tickets for free meals at each truck. Burgers and chicken, pulled pork and pasta, vegetarian fare, an ice cream truck. And Claude and Meredith were going around just handing out tickets willy-nilly, throwing tickets at people. Ticket, any truck, any meal, as often as you wanted, as many as you wanted, Centerway was paying. Get whatever you want, as much as you want, it's on them. They said, bring all your friends, and all the people in their church brought all their friends. They invited me. They invited me to invite you. And when I got there, I saw a Willowbrook person in line at a truck talking to people in front of her. And it was a great afternoon, the picnic play, it was great. They put on a nice party. People everywhere, people on the grass, people in lawn chairs, people in the driveway, people under the pavilion. Centerway leadership and the people of their church were doing the best they could to go around and welcome everybody, and there's so many new people, and mingle and engage everyone who was there. But there were so many people, it was hard to attend to everyone's needs. And I saw some people sitting over at a table by themselves. They were just sitting there eating at a table by themselves, not talking to anyone. And I thought, I ought to go over there and talk to them. But right then, Tara, who is their children's minister, grabbed me. She said, oh, Pastor Walker. I said, oh, Tara. She said, how about them Steelers? I said, oh, yeah, I'm fine. She loves the Steelers, so I commiserated with her for a little while. And after I talked to her, I started heading over to the people that were sitting alone at the table. And then I realized I didn't need to, because Margaret was sitting there with them. And as I walked up, they were talking and laughing and having a good time. Margaret introduced us. She told me something about, she told me stuff about them. She offered me some of their food. That was kind of weird. But apparently they'd gotten to, we're sharing our french fries with each other level, so that was fine, I guess. And I thought, wow, she even finds ways to serve people when she's a guest at someone else's party. Wow. And I'm pretty sure that someday in heaven, I'm pretty sure Jesus is going to come up and say, hey, Margaret, do you remember that time when you came over and sat with me at the picnic table? And she'll go, no. And Jesus said, yeah, you remember. We were at that picnic table at Centerway's party. And Margaret will go, oh, that was you? And he'll say, kinda. He said, thanks for doing that. And she'll say, you're welcome. Sure. So many of you are like that, which is why when asked, so John, how's your church? I now say without hesitation and without question, we're great. We've got tons of sheep. And they look at me and go, what? And I go, like people on the right who serve Jesus by serving others. Not because we have to, not trying to earn anything, just because we get it. Just because we understand how lucky we are to even be offered what we've got. The people on the right weren't there because they did things to earn points with Jesus. Like, oh, there's a person with need. I bet if I do something for them, Jesus will count that as one for me. The sheep, when Jesus explains to them, they didn't even know what counted. They were just helpful. And when you let Jesus train you how to live life, you're not learning how to collect tickets. You're learning that life is meant to be lived serving. So you see where you can help, and you help. Jesus doesn't want us to just help people. Jesus wants us to help people. But he doesn't want us to just help people. He wants us to get to the point where we want to help people, where we're helping people, not because that's what we do, but because that's who we are. And then at the end, Jesus will go, thank you. And you'll say, for what? And he'll say, I loved every time you helped somebody along the way. Every time, I love that. And we'll say, good. Glad you did. So let's review. Are you ready? Is there a sense of anticipation in how you do every day of your life? Are you ready? Number two, are you responsible? Are you using as best you can right now what Jesus has given to you to advance what he wants in this world? Number three, are you on the right? Are you living life helping whoever is next in line just because they need help? That's what life is like when you live in the kingdom of heaven. Let's pray.